Welcome to the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Hagen, a nutrition coach, entrepreneur, food freedom expert, and forever a recovering disordered eater. I am here to help you own your enoughness, find your very own food freedom, and achieve your health and wellness goals in a way that gives more than it takes. Each week, I will provide you with insight and inspiration surrounding no-nonsense nutrition, mindset, motivation, body image, confidence, and other wellness wisdom. Okay, friend. I am here with Coach Lauren. Lauren, happy Friday. How are you?
Yes, happy Friday to you too. I'm doing good. Gearing up for a lake weekend. So all good things over here.
I feel like it's so unfair that we say happy Friday when we're recording and maybe people are listening to this on like a Monday. Doesn't that suck?
Yes. Yes, that would suck because they're released on Wednesdays, right?
They're released on Wednesdays, but I know I don't always listen to podcast episodes the day they're released.
I know people are celebrating their weekends coming up and you got the whole week ahead of you. That's not fun.
We're sorry
everybody.
If you're listening to this on a Monday or a Tuesday or a Wednesday, Friday's coming. And we're just glad that you're spending your day, whatever day it is, with us.
Yes. So grateful for it.
Well, we have another Q&A episode today with some great questions I'm excited for. And let's just dive right in, Lauren. I feel like we normally do some chit-chatty stuff, but I know we're on a time crunch and we want to get the people who are listening this value. So let's do it. Can I start with one of the questions I got?
Please.
Okay. This was a good one. A little bit on the longer side. This person said, I've been slowly creeping up in weight this year, and I know I have been slightly less conscious of fun foods and drinks. However, I'm curious if a job change would cause anything drastic. I guess I'm asking, how drastically does neat non-exercise activity play if I'm not on my feet all day anymore?
This is a great question because I think a lot of people are going to be able to get a lot of like insight out of our answers. So if you went from a job, maybe you were a waitress or something like that, and you're on your feet a lot or a similar type job to a desk job, that is going to dramatically impact your energy out. We know that NEAT accounts for like 15% of our total caloric, you know, our energy needs throughout the day. 15% is a huge chunk. To put that in perspective, exercises. Now I'm blanking, maybe 3 to 5%.
5%,
so,
yeah.
Five percent. So it's a much smaller portion, but people credit exercise with burning calories. No, that's great. That's what we need to do. Improving your NEAT is going to be one of the most beneficial things you can do for your health and weight management in general. So if there is a dramatic drop in that, it's absolutely going to impact energy out. So if that energy drops and you're still consuming the same amount of calories, it makes sense then that there might be a slow and steady, you know, weight gain. Because when do we see weight gain? If we're in a consistent caloric surplus over time. Combined with the fact that this person also mentioned that she's being a little more loosey-goosey with the fun foods, which it's summer, it happens to us all. The kind of unfortunate reality of that is that it is stupidly easy to overconsume calories without realizing it. Like literally last night, real life example here. I try, you know, not to be a mindless snacker like we all do, whatever. And yesterday I noticed I grabbed a few handfuls of like Cinnamon Toast Crunch. And then I had like an Oreo after dinner. And I was like, huh, those are all kind of extra bites and nibbles that I don't normally do in my day. And I was just sitting there thinking, I'm like, God, that was a couple hundred extra calories, like easy. And it didn't feel like much at all. It was like done in passing. So the point there is that it's so easy to knock yourself into a caloric surplus with adding in more fun foods and beverages and a decrease in activity. That would absolutely make sense that we're going to see some slow and steady weight gain from those behaviors. So awareness is key. We need awareness before we have any kind of change. So it's fantastic that this person is saying like, I see a pattern here. I'm wondering if these two things are connected to this pattern of my weight going up when I don't feel like I've changed a ton. Unfortunately, those like seemingly small changes can add up pretty quickly to a caloric surplus, which is, going to eventually over time add to weight gain.
I think that this woman knew exactly
what was contributing to the weight gain. She was just looking for some confirmation, and she was spot on, right?
Yep.
Going from a job, I always think of my male woman who's like walking all day, every day, to a job where, like mine, I'm sitting on my butt for hours staring at a computer screen. One, like you mentioned, drastically reduces caloric expenditure, but also I'm more likely to snack because I'm sitting. Like if I was walking or I'm distracted or I'm up doing things, I'm less likely to maybe munch on some of those mindless snacks, fun foods and beverages. But perhaps this individual went from a very active job to a sedentary job, and now she just has more opportunity or maybe closer proximity to her kitchen where food is. So both of those things combined absolutely can lead to a weight trend, even if, and we went on to have this part of the conversation, her workout schedule, her workout intensity has stayed exactly the same or even increased a little bit. Because like you said, exercise is a smaller piece of the puzzle, up to 5% energy expenditure per day, whereas this non-exercise activity, three times that much. So if you're taking your knee and cutting it significantly, even if your exercise has stayed the same or increased a little bit, you're still burning fewer calories overall. It's why we're so passionate about helping our clients to build in movement into their lives, not just get to the gym a couple of times each week to really like get a good sweat session in.
Well, and I think that's a good point to add to it too, is that you don't, it's not like all hope is lost. You have a desk job now. You have to just eat dramatically less. Like, no, that is not at all what we're saying. But intentionality and awareness when it comes to consuming fun foods and beverages is always key no matter what. And yeah, adding in movement throughout the day is key. So maybe every, you know, hour or two, you can get up and walk for 10 minutes or, you know, just find ways to incorporate movement outside of intentional exercise back into your day. It might take a little extra effort that you didn't need when you had this previous job. Now circumstances have changed. So yeah, it might take a little bit more intentional effort on your part to get some movement in throughout the day. You might not get back to where you were, and that's fine. But how can we just bump up that non-exercise activity? Just, I mean, for your health overall, your health and just weight management. So it's not all hope is lost. It's just, okay, we might have to be a little more intentional with our efforts here.
And I think sometimes you can do it in very simple ways. So I'm a big advocate of like scheduling blocks of time where you're able to leave your office or leave your desk and literally just spend 10, 15 minutes going for a walk on your lunch break or a mid-afternoon break, whatever. That's great. But I think we fail to acknowledge how big of a difference it can make to, and we've all heard this, but like park the furthest you can when you go to the gym, when you go to the grocery store, when you go to the bank, when you go to the doctor's office. Like I almost make it a game to see how far away I can park and then walk in. Like it's now just become a practice. So I think little things like that, instead of stopping at the mailbox on your way home in the car, can you park the car, go in the house, then go back out to the mailbox? You know, like just incorporating some more movement in like little tiny ways that don't even feel like they matter. Time and time again, add it up, they do matter.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Do housework. I mean, like might be outing myself here, but there's like a constantness of housework to be done in my house. There's always something to straighten up, whatever, walk around and do instead of like lounging on the couch with, you know, a show on or a book or whatever. So yeah, just get up and move. Like it doesn't have to be anything. And like, there's also like a really short 10-minute loop that I'll do multiple times a day if I have to, just to get out and do it. Like there's so many simple ways to add it in.
I have an answer to this next question, but I don't think it's going to be well received. So I want to hear your answer first. Are you ready?
Hot take. Here we go.
I love the way intermittent fasting makes me feel, but I'm still struggling with binging at night after everyone else goes to bed. Any ideas?
If you're struggling with binging and you're intermittent fasting, I'm going to say you don't love the way intermittent fasting makes you feel. Maybe you think you do, but I'm going to assume after binging, you don't feel awesome. And I think it's a pretty clear connection there that you're not eating for a chunk of your day and then you're binging for the other chunk of your day. Those two are very connected. You can't deny that connection there. It's not like the binging and the intermittent fasting can't be separated. So my take on that would be you need to stop intermittent fasting. At least give it a try. You have to be willing to give it a try and let go of that for a certain amount of time if you want to really attack and be successful with overcoming the binge eating. We know eating more consistently throughout the day is going to lead to less cravings, less, you know, more even hunger, and hopefully less binging. So yeah, to me, it's just, it's a pretty simple answer here. Like, you need to give it up for a little bit. You need to start incorporating more food at more even intervals throughout the day, and try, you have to be willing to try that if you want to overcome the binging. It's such a common pitfall of intermittent fasting. I feel like people, I'll just skip breakfast. And then that's an easy way to cut out calories. And all these benefits are so great for me. So I'm just going to do that. And then you're starving all the rest of the day. And eventually you're going to break and overeat, binge, whatever. So yeah, I don't know. This one's a simple one to me. You have to cut out the intermittent fasting. There's really not much more I can say. You have to start eating. You have to start eating more regularly and not forcing yourself to skip meals when you're probably hungry.
Yeah. I'm glad that you said that because it makes me feel a little better about my response, which is very similar to yours. I struggled a little bit with feeling abrasive is the word that's coming to mind, but I don't think I'm ever really abrasive. I don't know. You tell me. But intermittent fasting is intentional restriction. You are taking your entire 24-hour day and saying, I am going to restrict the meal window, the feeding window, to these 4 hours, these 6 hours, these 8 hours, whenever it is. And then I'm going to refuse or deny myself the option to eat for the remaining 12 hours, 16 hours. Intermittent fasting can be whatever ratio of time we want it to be. That is restriction by definition, right? And I think there's a time and a place for intermittent fasting. I'm not saying it's always terrible, but if we take a look at why binge eating happens, most of the time there are some emotional components, some, you know, trauma related issues that can sometimes be triggers for binge eating. But if we look at why most people that we interact with are binging, it's because they're restricting either physically and or mentally. So they're feeling restricted. Maybe they're telling themselves that they can't eat certain foods, even though they are eating them. That mental restriction plays a very similar role to physical restriction, like intermittent fasting. And then because we're not getting what we need, or it feels like we're not getting what we need, we then overconsume or we binge on treats and sweets and just food in general as a response to that. So binging feels like the problem, but it's really our brain's solution to the problem that is restricting. So in this scenario, again, for you and I, it's easy to be like, this is a pretty clear equation here. If intermittent fasting is restricting and it's leading to binging, and the binging is something we don't want, then we have to take away the intermittent fasting. I think I struggle because this woman said, I love the way intermittent fasting makes me feel. And you and I are in the business of helping our clients to look, feel, and perform their best. So if a woman says, I love how this makes me feel, typically I'm like, yes, let's do more of it. How can we incorporate that? So I think, to make a long coaching call, which is what this would have to be, very short, I would ask her, what exactly does intermittent fasting make you feel? Because I'm wondering if she's liking the feeling of that empty belly, of that I'm going so long without eating. And that maybe is a glorified feeling in her brain because of her dieting history. And then maybe when she is eating, it doesn't feel like she's overeating because she only has a couple of hours to get her meals in. And if that feels like discipline or self-control, perhaps, I'm hypothesizing here. Obviously, she's not on this call to defend herself or to share more information. But I'm wondering if I love how this makes me feel is a little misplaced. And if we were able to help her draw the comparison or the parallel between the fasting and the binging, if maybe then her mind's eye would open and be like, oh gosh, I really don't like the result of the intermittent fasting. What happens if I change the way that I'm structuring my meals, or I'm changing the timing of my food so that I can feel more in control, more mindful of my choices all the time?
I think you brought up such an amazing point about how is this making you feel good? Because controlling that feels really good for a short amount of time. Like, it feels good to be like, look at what I can do. I don't have to eat for X amount of hours. I'm so disciplined and I have such strong control over this. Like, yeah, that feels good. Also, it might feel good, like you said, that empty belly feeling, like I'm killing this. I'm doing so good. I'm going to see all these results. But in the end, it's not getting you any results that you want because it's leading to this other behavior. So it might make you feel good, but like you said, you really need to dig into what is making you feel good and actually is it? Because if it's leading to binging, I don't know if it is making you feel all that good. I would kind of push back on that a little bit.
Yeah. And is the motivation behind the feeling good coming from a healthy place? I mean, I'm vividly remembering, I don't know how many years ago this was, but it was when I was deeply struggling with my eating disorder. And my dad and I were going to a baseball game, which is strange because that's not something we do often, but whatever. We're going to a baseball game. And I remember walking into this baseball game with him. And I felt so proud of the fact that I hadn't eaten anything in 9 hours. And this was daytime, right? We were heading to a baseball game in the evening. And I was like, guess what? I haven't eaten in 9 hours. And my dad's response was like, what? Why? And I just remember it feeling like I was so proud of the fact that I had gone so long without eating. Like that was something noteworthy. And in his brain, it was like, this is problematic. Like that's not something to feel excited about, but I'm wondering if maybe there's a little bit of, you know, disordered eating or just diet culture conditioning there where it's like, oh, I feel so good about the fact that I haven't eaten since 6 p.m. yesterday. You know, I think maybe there's some of that happening.
Yeah. I had a memory come like flooding back to me when you just shared yours. I've dealt with disordered eating for so long. And I remember once in high school, I was old enough to be driving and I had bought myself this, like, I want to say it was probably like a 300 calorie meal replacement bar. And I had decided like, this is going to be my food for the day. And I did it one day. I'm sure it was the only day I ever managed to live off of a protein bar for the day. But God, oh, I was so proud of myself. Like, look at what I did. I did this. And then I'm sure I binged for a week afterwards. But yeah, I mean, what a sad memory to look back on and be like that 16, 17 year old girl trying to live off of a protein bar for the day. That's heartbreaking. So yeah, I mean, who knows what kind of background this person has that's asking the question. But you do have to kind of dig a little deeper there and be like, okay, where is this coming from? What is this motivation here?
Yeah. And what's the behavior we're validating? Is it that, oh, I starved myself for so many hours. Yay me.
Yay. Yeah.
Probably something we need to revisit.
Yes.
Okay. I've been confiscating all the time. Your turn.
What question do you have? Okay. What makes up a good protein powder or protein bar?
Okay. This is a great question. And first of all, I want to say, protein powders and protein bars are supplements that are meant to supplement an already sufficient, well-balanced diet. So if someone was saying, hey, do I need a protein powder or a protein bar? I would say, no, absolutely not. You don't. You can get everything you need from Whole Food. However, protein powders and protein bars are supplements that can make eating balanced meals and getting your protein quota for the day a lot easier. It's a convenience-based food that I use personally, and it's a lifesaver sometimes when I don't have any protein. Maybe I ran out of protein prepped for the week. Okay, cool, protein powder in the pantry. I'm in the car. Some appointment took longer than I expected. I'm ravenous. If I wait till I get home, I'm not going to feel great. I'm going to turn into that like hangry troll. Cool, protein bar, like in my glove box. This is a great, like, in a pinch, time saver. So I'm a big advocate of protein bars and protein powders, depending on why we're using them. So again, like your meal replacement bar, if we're looking at a protein bar or protein shake to be like a meal replacement, we've got a little issue. We still want to make sure that it's supplementing an already healthy, well-balanced diet. Now, that being said, I think this person is asking, like, what should I be looking for if I'm choosing a protein powder? Let's start with powders just because I think they're a little easier. When I'm looking at a protein powder, the first thing that I would encourage a client to ask is what type of protein is best for you? So there are actually a lot of different types of protein powders that we can utilize. The most common is whey protein, and that's a dairy derivative. So whey protein is usually the one that if someone's talking about a protein powder, that's what they're talking about. It's the most readily available. It's probably the tastiest. It's just probably the one that most people are utilizing. And it's a milk protein. So if you have any type of dairy allergy, dairy sensitivity, it's not going to be for you. So again, I would just take a look at, okay, well, what's best for me? If you have a dairy tolerant belly, whey is what I would recommend starting with. For people who are maybe trying to avoid dairy for any or all reasons, there are plenty of other protein powders like egg white protein powder. There are meat-based protein powders now, bone broth protein powders. There are also plant-based protein powders like pea, rice, hemp, soy protein powders. Like, the list goes on and on. To keep it simple, if one of my clients is like, Nicole, what protein powder should I be using? Keeping in mind that our clients are usually coming to us for like robust, healthy nutrition strategies and sustainable fat loss. So I'm not talking to the person who's looking for a protein powder to help them put on weight. There are some bulking, if we want to use that word, protein powders that come with a lot of calories and come with a lot of, you know, additional sugar and carbohydrates in addition to protein. I'm not talking about that. I would recommend starting with whey protein. If, like myself, dairy does your belly dirty, then maybe start with a non-dairy protein powder, something like the bone broth, the meat alternatives, or I use a plant-based protein powder just because that's what feels best for me. The whey protein is a complete protein, so it has all essential amino acids, whereas the plant-based protein powder is a little less ideal in terms of nutrition composition. But again, if it's supplementing an already well-balanced diet, you're totally fine. You don't have to worry about anything. You're getting all the essential amino acids you need with that plant-based protein powder in addition to what you're typically eating. What else should you look for? I like to look for what percentage of that powder is protein. So is it predominantly protein? That's what you would think from a protein powder supplement. But I have looked at protein powders before where if you look at the back of the nutrition label and you compare how many grams of carbs, how many grams of fat, and how many grams of protein are in a serving of that powder, protein is not the highest. In fact, maybe it's the lowest. So that tells me what this powder is actually giving you is not primarily protein. It's carb and fat. So you have to be vigilant about reading a nutrition label and just taking a look at, is this predominantly protein? Is this powder going to do what I am expecting it to do for me? I like to look for at least 20 grams of protein per scoop or per serving if I'm looking for a protein powder supplement. There might be more than that. I've used ones that are up to like 25 or 30 grams, but typically between 20 and 30 grams of protein. The next thing that I would look at is the carbohydrate content. Is there a lot of carbohydrate in this powder? Sometimes with a plant-based protein, you'll also get 20 grams of carbs. But for most of us, we're looking for a predominantly protein supplement that we can add to things like oatmeal or a protein shake or throwing it in a recipe that we're making or having it, you know, in a protein bowl or protein smoothie or protein pancakes. And in that case, I'm probably adding it to another carb. So I don't want a lot of carbs in my protein powder. So just taking a look at, well, are there carbs in here? Is there added sugar in here? And that brings me to sweetener. What is the protein powder sweetened with? Do you have any reason to avoid artificial sweetener? I know my dad gets migraines anytime he has artificial sweetener. Some people get bloated by artificial sweetener. I am totally fine and can enjoy artificial sweetener in moderate quantities. So is your protein powder sweetened with something like stevia or something like cane sugar, which are a little bit more natural sources of sweetener? Or is it sucralose, aspartame, erythritol, which are more artificial sweeteners and sugar alcohols? That is probably like the three-step process that I would take a look at so as not to overwhelm someone. I know that probably sounds like a ton of word vomit, but basically, what type of protein are you looking for? What's going to be the best for your body? How much protein is it actually giving you in comparison to other things? And how is it sweetened? Generally, a serving of protein powder is going to be around 150 calories because it's a serving of protein, which if we compare to a 4-ounce chicken breast, which is also a serving of protein, about 150 calories. Now, if there's tons of other stuff thrown in there, it may be higher. And that's why I say, read the ingredients, read the nutrition label. What would you add?
That was beautiful. I would add taste. It has to taste good. If you don't like it, you're not going to use it. And again, these are supplements. You don't have to use them. Most people use protein powder because it is convenient. And because if you find one that you like, it's pretty tasty, right? They have all so many different flavors these days, and you can use them in so many different ways. So people are using them, you know, because it's tasty, it's convenient, and it's a good source of protein. So you don't have to. But it is all of those things. So it can be really helpful. A lot of people do find it helpful, but you have to actually like it. Otherwise you're just, you know, flushing your money down the toilet. Like, I have my favorite flavors. My husband is straight vanilla. I like to play around with it a little bit and get, you know, I have a chocolate cupcake one right now that I like. So yeah, I would do everything that you said. Plus, do you actually enjoy the taste of it?
That is
a lot of companies too do sample packs. So you can try it out that way too.
Yes. It goes without saying, but obviously maybe it doesn't go without saying, if you don't like it, you're not going to use it. So why spend your money on a 2-pound tub, which can sometimes be the drawback of trying protein powder, because you don't want to spend $30-$40 on a 2-pound tub, which might sound like a lot, but granted, it lasts you a long time. I mean, one scoop to two scoops is generally a serving size, depending on whether you're male, female, what your goal is, what your weight is. So it's actually one of the lower cost proteins available out there. What I would also mention is bars are similar, but can just be a little bit more sneaky in terms of marketing, I've found. So what I typically tell clients is some protein bars are really just Snickers in gym clothes, and other protein bars are like halfway decent and they're going to be helpful. So looking at a protein bar, I would take a look at calories again, because some of them are marketed as meal replacement, and then they may have upwards of 300, 400 calories. That's a lot of calories for something that you're hoping to just be a snack to tide you over between meals. So if I'm looking at a protein bar, I look at somewhere the 200, no more than 250 calorie range. Again, I want it to be giving me protein. So if it doesn't have at least 20 grams of protein, I might think about what I could add to it. Now, there are protein bars out there. I'm thinking of an RX bar, super natural, a great option, made from egg whites, nuts, dates, and then like blueberries or chocolate chips, you know, whatever flavoring they're adding. That only has 12 grams of protein, if I'm remembering accurately. Mm-hmm. So that's probably not going to be a lot to hold you over. But could you add that to another protein, like maybe a Greek yogurt, if you're looking for something to tide you over for several hours? Or are you just looking for something to maybe hold you over for an hour or two, in which case those 12 grams of protein might be fine. But for me and how I typically use protein bars, I'm looking for at least 20 grams of protein. Again, how many carbs? And how much sugar is added to that bar? Because sometimes there's, I think the one that I was most recently looking at was like the Gatorade protein bar. Now, granted, I think those are marketed more towards athletes. It had like 4+ servings of carbs and maybe one serving of protein. So it's just giving you a ton of carbs with a little protein, still marketed as a protein bar. But for those of us who are looking to lose body fat or just, again, have a snack that's going to tide us over between meals, it's really unnecessary. It's giving us a lot of added carbs, sugar, and calories we just don't need. So I personally like no cow bars. That's because, again, they don't have dairy. My belly doesn't do dairy. So I like it because it has 20 grams of protein per bar. It's around 200 calories. It is artificially sweetened, but again, my belly's fine with that. And it's giving me only one serving of carbs, which I'm fine with. So that's a bar that, again, I like the taste of. It is easily portable. It's very convenient. I can have one pretty much wherever I am in case I need that. It's not something I encourage most clients to utilize regularly. So something just to keep in mind is that protein bars are very energy dense, meaning they're not going to take up a lot of room in your stomach. So if you're looking for something to fill you up, a protein bar is probably not going to do it. Whereas you could get the same calories, the same protein, a serving of carbs, a serving of fat in a really beautiful meal that's going to fill you up so much more. So again, it's something where if you're in a pinch, you need something, or you're going to eat three times as much whenever you do get around food, great. Use a protein bar, use a protein shake. But otherwise, I prefer to rely on whole sources of food most of the time.
Yeah, I totally agree. I used to be like a protein bar person every day, and I have like cut way back, and I really save them for like, we've been on the go so much this summer. And so they are, as a vegetarian, especially, like I can't, you know, I don't do like turkey wraps and things like that, that like my kids will do. So a lot of times it's a bar or, you know, combined with other things. So they've been a savior for me this summer. I've probably used them more than I will, you know, coming up on the school year when I'm home more regularly and life's slightly less chaotic. When it comes to protein to calories, I do like to kind of aim for like 10% of the calories should be protein. So for a 200 calorie bar, that should be about 20 grams. The RX bars in particular that you mentioned, those are usually like over 200 calories for those 12 grams of protein. So it really is a carb with some protein. Yeah. It's, to me, it's not those bars specifically, because you brought them up, and similar ones, pay attention to the label. Like 10% is kind of a good thing to aim for, I think, to make sure you're getting a true protein bar and not a bar with a ton of carbohydrates that has some protein in it too. So that's just like a quick little math you can do. I find it helpful. My current favorite, if you're looking for a just regular old whey one, are the Bear Bells. I have eaten a lot of protein powder or protein bars over the years. I have tried a ton. These are legit delicious. These are so, so good. 200 calories, 20 grams of protein. By far my favorite I've ever tried. So that's a little plug for those. I mean, I get nothing out of it, but that's just my like personal recommendation. Those are delicious if you don't need to look for a dairy-free one. But yeah, make sure you're getting enough protein and make sure you're not relying on them every single day. I do find protein powder is a little different. It is more of a food to me, like that you can incorporate most days, than a bar, because you are getting so many other things with that bar. And like you said, they're not super filling. Like they're just like, you're going to eat a bar and you might be hungry pretty soon after. So protein bars, I would encourage people to use as needed. Protein powder, if it's something you use every day and it sits well with you, I say go for it. That's personally how I feel about it.
Actually, you mentioned the RX bar, and I'm remembering just last night I was on a coaching call and someone brought a packet of Nature Valley bars. I think it was like peanut butter or something, but then on the front it had protein in huge letters. And she was like, look, I picked up some protein bars. And so I was like, let's look at the nutrition label together. And turns out protein was the lowest of carb, fat, and protein. So what that tells me is it's really a carb and fat bar with a little bit of protein. They're marketing the protein because they know people are looking for that. So yes, it pays to be an educated consumer and just know what you're eating. Don't grab something simply because it says protein, but make sure. I like the 10% rule. That was good.
Yeah. Take a second. Just flip that label over. Make sure you're getting what you think you're getting out of it.
Exactly. Okay. Final question. Are you ready for this one?
Yeah.
I'm always encouraged by the client wins you share, but I struggle comparing their timeline to mine. This isn't a question, but your insight is appreciated.
Oh, the comparison game is a progress killer. And this is across the board for everything in life. You like put your blinders on and focus on yourself. I think it is fantastic to look at people in similar situations who have achieved what you're trying to achieve and use that as inspiration, motivation, whatever that may be. But no two people, no two circumstances are ever exactly the same. And it's so unfair to yourself to compare. It's just completely unfair. And it's also, if you really think about it, what's the point? What are you getting out of it? What benefit are you seeing from comparing her progress is further along than my progress? There's no real benefit there. All you can do is focus on yourself, control the controllables. What can you control in your life? What tweaks can you make to get yourself to your goal at whatever rate is necessary and works for you? There is no like gold medal at the end here. If somebody takes 6 months to lose 20 pounds and it takes you a year to lose 20 pounds, who really cares? You still have reached the goal. If there's just no point to me in putting a timeline on things and comparing progress and speed, because everybody is different. We could all work out exactly the same. We could all eat exactly the same and we would all look totally different. So it is just completely unfair to yourself to play the comparison game. And it's just going to send you down a spiral that isn't going to end up anywhere good. So again, if you want to use similar people in similar situations as inspiration, if you are a working mom of three in their 30s, that may or may not be me, and you're comparing yourself to somebody, some like Instagram influencer whose job it is to look, cute and fit at the gym and they're 23 and they don't have children, that's completely unfair. So first, make sure you're looking towards people in similar situations. And second, make sure you're still mainly focusing on yourself, not putting any timeline on it, and just looking at your life and your unique circumstances and your unique body and your unique goals and taking action to reach those so that you can feel your best and live your best life, which even if you hit those goals is still going to look different from that person that you're comparing to. So it's such an easy game to play. And I think as humans, it's a natural thing, but we have to intentionally not do it, because it just sends us down such a negative spiral of what's wrong with me? Why can't I do this? she's so much better than me. I suck at this. I'm never going to reach my goals versus, wow, that's awesome that she can do that. What tweaks can I make to get to my personal goals?
I think it's pain shopping. I get that it's a little bit human nature. I also get that as women especially, but probably either gender, we're pitted against each other as like a, who's going to get there faster? And she looks better than I do. I get that. But at the end of the day, I think it's just a procrastination strategy and pain shopping for us to be able to say, see, she has something I don't. I'll never be successful. I think a lot of the time we're using it to support a limiting belief that we have about ourselves that we don't want to be true, but it's almost like confirmation bias. It's a fixed mindset thing, right? Like I just knew that I wasn't going to be able to be successful at this. And the fact that she got there faster or she looks better than I do, even though I've been at this longer than she has, it's just proof that I can't be successful at this. I think it's just us trying to confirm our fixed mindset, which we know is never going to get us to where we want to go. Because at the end of the day, I do think even comparing our journey to someone who's in a similar situation, a mom in her 30s who works full time, blah, 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 whatever, there's still so many circumstances that you can't see that could be significantly different. Like, did you grow up with a diet culture mom who had you starting Weight Watchers at 8? And maybe she grew up with a mom who gave her unconditional permission to eat whatever the hell she wanted. Did you grow up with kids at school who constantly picked on you for your size? And maybe she didn't. Like, there's just so many things that come into play in terms of how long does it take me to make progress? How many bumps do I have along the way? How many, you know, obstacles and barriers? What's our mindset like? I mean, I have some clients who struggle with debilitating mental illnesses, and they are doing everything in their power to be successful. They might see someone on social media who's reaching a goal so much faster. Maybe they're just gifted with a beautiful, healthy brain that doesn't need to struggle with depression or anxiety or any of that. There's just too many variables that we're comparing that are not apples to apples, and it's just not fair at all. And I think it's just never a good idea. Even I hate it when people are like, the only person you can compare yourself to is yourself, because I see that fall apart time and time again, because maybe you're comparing you now to you before you had kids, or you when you were in high school, before you had a job and before you had financial responsibilities and before you had aging parents that you had to take care of. Like, it's not fair to compare that version of you to the version you are now because your circumstances are different. It's just never a good idea. And the only way that you're going to be able to move forward is putting your blinders on and focusing on you now, your current circumstances. What can you do? Use those wins, use those success stories as confirmation that it can be done. Cheer the shit out of that woman, and then use that to propel yourself closer towards your goal. Hey, someone else is doing this with me. That's awesome. I'm not alone in this. Look, it can be done. Women can be successful despite having decades of diet culture conditioning behind them, fighting against them. This is awesome. I'm on the right path. I'm going at my pace. But I think if we start to compare, we just kind of pull ourselves off track.
Yes. And I'm glad you said confirmation bias. That is kind of what I meant when I said, look at similar people who have achieved your goal as proof that it can be done. And, but like you said, the variables are infinite. So you can't ever say she's better than me because she can do it and I can't do it because of this. Like, there's no situation is the same. So you really can't ever compare, like you said. But I do really like your point of it's pain shopping and it's just confirming the story that we're telling ourselves. And it's almost like giving you permission to not try.
Yeah.
Well, I can't do it because I have these things in my life. So what's the point? I can't do it like her. So I'm going to just give up. Like, yeah, I think it can really keep you stuck in this story that is, I'm never going to be successful. So why even try? Because I can't do it like she can do it, or she's doing it better or faster or whatever than me. So I guess I'll just give up. Yeah, I think that was a fantastic point. Don't use that as a reason to not get started. You just have to look at your own unique current circumstances, look at where you want to be, and then just start taking some action towards that goal, no matter how small, no matter how slow you're going. That's the only thing you can do. Otherwise, you're just going to stay stuck.
I know that I speak for both of us when I say this, share wins to show you what's possible from women who have taken their circumstances, completely transformed their relationships with food, their body composition, their health status, and have each and every step along the way taken time to look for and celebrate those wins. If you are taking someone else's win and using it as an opportunity to make yours mean less, you're missing the point. Like, you're missing the entire point. What I want for you to do when you see someone else sharing a win, celebrating a win, is clap for that woman, go her, and then find your own freaking win. Even if it's small, even if it feels inconsequential in comparison, we're not comparing, remember? I want you to look at where you're at, your given circumstances, what you've been working on, and be like, here's my win for the day. Here's my win for the week. Here's my win. This is what matters. And you celebrate those teeny tiny wins that feel like they don't matter. I promise they do. And one day you will be celebrating big wins too. But it's just the principle of finding the wins, even when it feels like there are other things that aren't going well, that gets you to progress. Not saying, oh, someone else is winning, that means I must be losing. Everything sucks.
Okay, can I share kind of a cheesy, like, for visual people, like a cheesy.
I'm a hopeless romantic. So cheesy.
Okay. Oh, okay. Didn't know this about you. I've seen this and I don't know where I've seen it. So I am definitely like paraphrasing, but it's like, think of all the different types of flowers. They're all beautiful, but they're all completely different looking. Tulips and daisies and roses and I'm out. That's all the flowers I know. But like, but there's like 1,000 different kinds and they're all so different, but they're all beautiful. And like, we can kind of look at women and our journey to like self-acceptance and feeling comfortable and confident and with the relationship with food and relationship with our body in a similar way. Like, just because somebody is this like beautiful version of what you think you should be, you can look different and it can still be amazing and worthy of wins and celebration.
Celebrate your own damn self.
Oh, yeah.
You might be a rose. Somebody else might be a Gerber daisy. That's fine. Just, you know, bloom wherever you're planted and know that your circumstances are going to be different. Your external facing winds are going to be different. And that doesn't matter. I think there's just so many opportunities for us to compare, especially that so much of our lives now are shared on social media. And it's never in the history of ever resulted in any positive impact, as far as I'm concerned.
No, I'm with you. Agree 100%.
All right. So we're agreed. We're going to just celebrate the shit out of each other, because any woman celebrating
empowerment
is worth praising and looking inward and saying, how can I celebrate me?
This is so timely too with the Barbie movie. I mean, it's all about like, we are just so on brand right now with like,
I haven't seen it.
I haven't either. I'm going next week. I can't wait. I'm taking both my girls. It's going to be a whole thing. We're very excited.
Then there's this whole conversation of like, I'm glad Barbie is encouraging female empowerment, because they feel like Barbie was very like size exclusive. And there's a lot that Barbie probably encouraged in terms of negative we won't go there though.
Full circle. Full circle moment for Barbie.
All right, squad. If you have a question you want to hear on the next Q&A podcast episode with Coach Lauren and myself, go ahead, send us a DM. We are always happy to answer your questions that speak into your life. And for now, we will say see you later and catch you on the flip side.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast. If you like what you heard today, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe, and then head on over to nutritioncoachingwithnicole.com, where you can sign up for my weekly emails, where I send out my favorite tips, tricks, advice, and support every single Monday morning to help you kick your week off right. Thanks for listening. Until next time.